Sometimes in life we just suffer. Sometimes it's from being totally withdrawn, or so much stress that we are totally anxious, or so tired that we are totally burnt out. But our current position is not our final destination. No, indeed. There's hope. So whether it's your personal life, your career, your relationship, your business, or your job, we say there's reason to believe again. And we present from Andy's Personal Development, the Breakout Room. It's the place for health, happiness, and prosperity. Stay tuned for more.
Using and great people, welcome to the Breakout Room. This is your host and your partner in health, happiness, and prosperity, Andy Charles. And welcome to all the amazing and beautiful and wonderful people that have proven to be resourceful and committed to this community that we are building, a community of hope, happiness, health, prosperity, and love. We thank you for joining us on this episode as we came out of the celebration of the International Women's Day. Gotta pay our homage and respect to the ladies, all right? Enough respect as we big up the ladies. Incidentally, our guest is a woman, and I want to share some information with you concerning Sharon Fillmore. She is known as the Mary Poppins of family wellness. Sharon is your verbal communicator master with background as a registered nurse, NLP coach, verbal Aikido master and trainer, and a certified coach. She's also an award-winning author of the book entitled The Vital Link, 9 Ways to Have More Health. So, without further ado, let's introduce our guest in the Breakout Room live, Sharon Fillmore. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for inviting me, Andy. It's really nice to be here today.
It's a pleasure to have you, and we're looking forward to a wonderful and engaging experience as we share your vital information, things that you desire to see happen in the world with the rest of our audience and the people who are going to see this particular stream later on. So I want to get right to it, Sharon, and I hope you don't mind, but I want to ask you the million-dollar question. Why are you called or entitled sometimes the Mary Poppins of family awareness? Where did that come from?
Actually, that came from a friend who I was talking to her, and she was asking me, okay, so what have you managed to do? And she said, oh, you're the Mary Poppins of family wellness. I said, what do you mean? She said, if people are having an issue or a problem or a question, you always find the solution. Even if you don't have it right away, you go and find it for them. And it's true. I do. I love to help people. And when someone comes to me with a question or a problem, I will help them to find the answer. I will pull it out of them. And if it's not there, then we'll go search for it together.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you for sharing, Sharon. Your skill base seems to be so diverse. And Tell us about, I don't want to choose one particular competence that you have, but what would you consider your divine calling in life?
My divine calling is to help people find peace and harmony in their life. That's my divine calling. Mm-hmm. And I do that because it's one of the reasons why I have developed so many competencies is because I found that they were things that I needed to make a difference for people, so that I could help people, so that I could help pull their greatness out. Every single one of us has greatness. We just don't always recognize it. So I help you pull it out, and then I help you figure out what to do with it and then take action on it.
Yeah, wonderful. Sounds really good. You've spent 45 years in the healthcare field, and you have learned to be passionate and to take care of families, especially those who have been abused and so on. What was that experience like for you, and what were some of the great lessons that you would have learned as a result? 45 years, that's quite a long time.
Oh my goodness. So my compassion, I think, is something I always had. My mother was a very compassionate woman. And I think that I had that. And then becoming a nurse, and I worked in some high-risk areas like emergencies and ICUs, and I worked in the community. All of those things help you develop more compassion because you see the strife that people go through. And I would say that if I was going to choose one thing in all my years, it's going to be around verbal communication. Because whether it's a health problem, whether it's a problem in your home, whether it's an argument you're having with someone you love, or trying to talk to your teenager or your coworkers, if you have really good verbal communication skills, you can say anything to anyone. It all depends on how you say it and the words you use.
Yeah. And
I believe that is probably the number one, if I was going to choose one thing, that would be the number one thing that I would choose for what I have learned the most in my 45 years is learn how to communicate and communicate well.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you for sharing, Sharon. Now, this episode is entitled, What Should You Really Fear in Your Family? It's Sharon Fillmore. And I fear to use the word fear when it comes to family, but we have seen so many families fall apart. We have seen so many dysfunctionality existing in families, not over all the world per se, but in most of the world, because there are some places that we can't speak to or we can't relate to. In your experience, what are some of the challenges that people should really be aware of, not necessarily fear, but concerned enough to understand how it can make a difference in their family lives?
Okay. People come from different backgrounds and different beliefs and different ways of doing things. One of the things I'd sort of like to describe is our beliefs, majority of them we develop by the time we're 5. And between 5 and 7, it's even the most. And then after that, you only develop a few beliefs. So what happens is, this is one way I like to describe it. If you were flying a plane and a 5-year-old got on the plane and they were so cute, they're all dressed up in their captain's outfit and they go into the cockpit and you see them sit down in the captain's chair, how long would it take you to get off that plane? Wouldn't take long. And nope. So the question I ask people is, are your beliefs flying your plane? Because when two people come into a family, they come in with different cultures, even if you grew up in the same community, because your home is a part of your culture as well. So different cultures, different ways of talk, communicating, different ways of doing things. And then you have beliefs that served you when you were young, and they may not only serve you now, they may be conflicting with the other people that you're living with. And then what happens is you transfer those beliefs onto your children, and then they grow up with the same beliefs, which can be conflicting within themselves, not just with each other, because they have beliefs now, two conflicting beliefs. Because we get our beliefs, we develop them as we're young because they serve us, and we develop them from the people in our environment. So our parents, aunts, uncles, teachers, anyone that influences us. So I think that's one of the things to really look at when there's conflict in the family is the beliefs, and see whether or not they're serving you and or whether or not you'd like to change them. Because once we look at them, we think, why? Where did I get that belief? Like a belief like something must be done a certain way. There's a million people. There's a million different ways to do everything, right? Just things like that.
Wow. Okay. So what I'm hearing from you is that these challenges can come from different backgrounds because of different beliefs that people would have. And there are times there could be a clash with regards to these beliefs. What are some of the solutions that you would suggest that they can use to not only engage in an amalgamation of these beliefs, but to see how important each individual belief is, even though it may differ?
That's a really good point. Beliefs are something that can be, particularly if you pick them up when you're young, can be difficult to identify. So it's about when you say things or do something and you don't even know where it came from. You just know you always did. Sometimes that's a belief that you develop when you were young. And it's looking at writing that belief out and looking at it and saying, does this serve me now? Is this the one I want? Do I want to change it? What would I change it to? A good example would be something like, I'm not worthy. That's a huge belief that people have, that they don't feel worthy. And you look at where it came from. Maybe it came from your childhood because somebody said something and you misinterpreted it because you're only five. Yeah. And then it's deciding how you want to change that belief. And if you're with a partner, it's looking at their beliefs and they may have a belief of I'm not lovable. And they may have gotten that as well from a misunderstanding. And what happens then is one person doesn't feel worthy and the other person doesn't feel lovable. Both are extremely worthy and both are very lovable. Have you ever met anybody that isn't lovable? I mean, I haven't. I have met so many people in my life. I've been so fortunate. And it's about deciding what you want them to be. And there are ways that you can do. I have a chapter in my book on how to change things. And if that's not helpful, then you can always contact me because I will always help you, or I will send you to someone who will help you.
Right.
I will leave you hanging.
Okay. Great. I appreciate that. Okay. Thank you for sharing. So let's talk about the book a little bit. Mm-hmm. The Vital Link, 9 Ways to Have More Health, Wealth, and Happiness. We seem to have a sort of synergy with our theme there. At the Breakout Room, it's health, happiness, and prosperity. How did you, Sharon, come up with the theme for the book? And what is the main message that you want people to get, at least on 9 occasions?
Okay. it's interesting. I came up with the title of the book because there was 9 areas that I wanted to talk about. And I was having a conversation with my editor and I said, you know, these things are vital to have really good happiness and good health and good wealth in your life. These 9 areas are really important. And he said, that's the name of your book, The Vital Link. And I went, you're right, that's the name of the book. And so actually that's how it was a collaborative effort. The main focus of the book is, I think that what I want to help people with is that wherever you are in your life right now, you can always learn more. You can always be more. And we don't always know or understand why we're a certain way. And the book was designed so that you can pick it up. Say an example is, I have a chapter on happiness, and in the chapter, it talks about things like foods that help raise your serotonin and your dopamine levels. There's activities that help do it. And then there's habits to create so that every day you wake up and you go, yes, I am happy. What's exciting today? Okay. And so the idea of the book is to help people to figure out what it is they want to be better at. And then there's activities, there's stories, there's suggestions that you can use. And what I chose to do with the book was each chapter is different. So an example is, if you want to know something about how to communicate with your kids, there's a chapter on that. you want to know how to communicate with your significant other, your coworkers, there's a chapter on that. You don't have to read the entire book to figure out what it is you're looking for. And the purpose is to know that we're all vital. We're all special in our own way. And that we can, if there's an area where you want to improve, there's a way to improve. My mission in life is to help a million or more people through health and or wealth. And health can be in many forms, and so can wealth. Wealth of family, wealth of friends. And then there's also money.
Yeah.
We all need. There's a... Yes. We all need to be able to eat well, pay our bills, and have some fun, because fun's important too. So is there anything in particular that you would like to learn about, she'll say?
I'll have to think about that.
You're an extremely... intelligent man, you're very well read. You have helped yourself millions of people.
Thank you. For me personally, Sharon, it's about understanding the process of self-development and what it takes to be convicted by it. And most of the times, not just to plunge in, but to be the willing observer who understands the process of learning. A famous golfer, Arnold Palmer, said that the road to success is always under construction. And what I gather from that is, if you think that success is X, Y, and Z, you're going to have a problem understanding the process, because it's not about X, Y, and Z. It's about the journey to get in there that counts. And what you gain, what you learn, what you absorb, what you receive as a result of engaging with the journey, that's the real measure of the success. So if I can put that in a manner in which it can be palatable to the world in terms of what they perceive and what they see, then for me, that would be one of my greatest accomplishments. It would be deeply fulfilling. But what I also need to learn is that there are no limits to what people can learn, what people can achieve, and what people can accomplish. We all have our differences, as you would have explained in the earlier part with regards to relationships. But at the end of the day, we all have this equal opportunity. And that is one of the things I kind of struggle with. How do I get people to understand that everybody, despite color, creed, race, position, zeros in the bank account, we all deserve the same opportunity to have success like everybody else? That's one of my greatest challenges.
So, honestly, I think for people to truly understand that, we need to be sure that every single person on this planet is raised with respect, with dignity, and with truth. Because if you're raised with dignity, then you feel worthy. If you're raised with respect, you feel that you can open your mouth and you can speak your truth and not have to worry about what the consequences of that truth are, knowing that, after all, that is the way we have peace. That is the way we've resolved our differences, because you respect someone. Even if you don't agree with what they say, you still respect them, and you still believe they are entitled to say their piece, their word, to their explanation for whatever. And I think that speaking your truth, we don't do that. We live in a society where we believe that if we can't say it, that's why I teach communication, because people don't say things because they don't know how to say it in a way that is going to offend someone. So they're afraid to. And I think that those are things that are really important. And let's face it, if if everyone feels that they're respected and everyone's dignity is respected, and couldn't you imagine how much more would be going on? We would help each other more. And by helping each other, we're all going to be successful. And we're going to be successful in the areas we want to be successful in. You know, everyone's definition of success is different. So let's help people get that level of success.
Yeah.
And as far as how to get people to understand that, I think that basically it's like anything else. It's like you and I, we get on podcasts, we talk to people, we send it out to the world. We have this ability. Think about it. When I first started working in high school, if I didn't write the letter or make the phone call, nothing happened. Now I get on the computer and I can talk to hundreds. I can talk to thousands of people in seconds. It's magnificent. Like, it's for me, I think of all of the people's lives that I could have talked to, all the friends that I, that, you know, we just don't connect anymore. And we're starting to connect again. And it's because we have this opportunity. The other thing is people understanding that we're all changing constantly. Change is inevitable, whether it's you change your passion, you change your beliefs, you change where you live, you change your job. There's always change. And that's part of who we are. And we have a choice to make changes that are for our benefit or for someone else's benefit or for no one's benefit. And it's about understanding that, you know what, we're going to change. Doesn't matter. So let's decide that we're going to change for the moon and the world's benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that, Sharon. I absolutely appreciate that. As you were speaking, I was thinking about the process of education and the process of learning. And I have a video that I saw on my research that I want to share because it is so powerful. And then just give us what you think he really meant by this. I am sure you are aligning yourself with the values. Hold on, here it comes.
Education, it's a big challenge now. If we do not change the way we teach, 30 years later we'll be in trouble. Because the way we teach, the thing we teach our kids are the things in the past 200 years is knowledge-based. And we cannot teach our kids to compete in this machine who is smarter. We have to teach something unique. That is, machine cannot catch up with us. Value, believing, independent thinking, teamwork, care for others. These are the soft parts. The knowledge may not teach you that. But that's why I think we should teach our kids sports, entertainment, the music, painting, arts. For making sure humans should be different from, everything we teach should be different from machine. If the machine can do better, you have to think about it.
Yeah, your comment, Sharon.
Wow, he's so right, because he is. And I actually believe that. I had all my children in sports very young, learning teamwork, learning how to figure things out, how to problem solve. I used to tell them, it doesn't matter how smart you are, if you can solve the problem, you're smarter than anyone. And the independent thinking makes such a difference in teaching values, beliefs, and helping one another. They're the way, that's society, that's community. And that's how the world has gotten the way it is. It's how we've managed to do everything.
Right.
If you look back, I mean, they didn't develop the automobile, for one person. They developed it because they wanted people to be able to get around. They wanted goods and services to happen, which makes a difference for people's lives. And the independent thinking is the only way to get there. And you're right, machines will eventually be smarter than us. That doesn't mean that we don't have the capacity that they don't have. You know, we have greater things. You don't always need knowledge. You need the other things, and teaching how to be an independent thinker, how to help one another, how to be smarter than the machine who has great knowledge. Now, understanding that smart isn't strictly about knowledge. It's so many other things are related that we have as humans. I mean, but yeah, I like what he said. It was very cool. It's very cool. And I think teamwork is super important. I grew up in a family of four brothers, and we were all involved in sports. And I thought it was very important because I learned teamwork, but I also learned to work for myself. So my children were all in team sports, then they were all in a sport or music, something where they were, you know, that was not team, so that they would learn how to motivate themselves and learn how to be part of a team as well. And they are all independent thinkers. So, and I think that's why. And problem solving, I would help them walk through problems when they were younger, and they're all very good at it. They're all adults now, and I'm very proud of them, actually. Because I saw too, and I did, and it wasn't computers that made me see that. It was for them to be well-rounded individuals that were going to thrive in our society. It was important that they could work alone, work in groups, you could problem solve. Then they loved and cared for each other, and that's the example that we showed them. And you're right, that comes from not just from school, that comes from parents, that comes from your community. Mm-hmm. And it's time to start realizing, you know, we use that term, it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah.
But we only see it. It's actually true.
Right.
Yeah. So it's time to make it happen. I think by doing that, you know, we'll get the worthiness, we'll get the problem solving, we'll get the teamwork. You know, all of those things will happen when we all work together to raise our children in community.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you, Sharon. We've had three persons that had logged on, and I would love for the audience to really put a question or comment. We observe those. We appreciate them so much. Sharon has got a wealth of knowledge and information to share. And this is the platform in which we believe people should be able to connect as we speak about connectivity in the world, and we think about how we can really support each other as we continue to build this planet that we are so blessed to have. I want to sort of walk the walk in terms of the AI prospect. And I'm thinking, how is it that we fear something that we build? AI didn't happen all on its own. We created that.
Man did. Created
the machines that man is now seemingly afraid of. And I think that it's a reflection of looking at the man in the mirror. Are we afraid of ourselves? Are we afraid that the things that we have created is revealing a part of ourselves that we were not really happy to reveal? It makes us vulnerable, or it makes us more acceptable of our frailties as human beings. I am considering that we should be proud of ourselves, but we also have to understand that there's a very thin line drawn there. There are limitations. The machine cannot express empathy. Mm-mm. The machines cannot express love. The machines cannot express a spirit of nurturing. The machines cannot mentor. Why are we so afraid of them when we are blessed with those virtual qualities that we can do those naturally?
I think man has an inherent fear of change because we like to be comfortable. And when there's change, we feel that we are losing our level of comfort. And the reality is we're changing constantly. And it's very often subtle, so you don't notice it. However, you're always changing. Our society is constantly changing. And when we have things like big things like AI come in, like do you remember when vehicles first came in, they said horseless carriages would never catch on. They said personal computers would never catch on. And now they're saying, you know, that they said that the looking after the environment would reduce the number of jobs. It's actually increased the number of jobs that are available. And then let's take AI. Yeah, AI is something that many people are afraid of because everything can be used for good and everything can be used for not good, for bad.
Yeah. Right?
And it's a choice that we, because we're humans, we have that ability. It's a choice we can make. And as far as the change for the individual, we fear change because we love our comfort. We love our comfort creatures. We love our comfort creatures too. We all like our pets. And I think that it's understanding that you're fearing change. You're not fearing what's coming. You're not fearing this new technology, this new advancement. It's fear of change and it's fear of losing your comforts or having to learn. When we go back to education, it's about instilling in children that we're all life learners. I've never stopped learning. I'm constantly taking courses and I'm so excited to always be learning something. And I think that is something we naturally do. It's just now it needs to be aware. We need to be more aware. And by teaching it in the classroom, then about being a life learner, then I think that will help people to be less fearful of change because they know it's always. I had this wonderful teacher when I was in nursing school. And when we were graduating, she said, remember, this is the beginning of your education.
Wow.
And every year, learn something new. And every year, you'll be a better nurse and a better person. And I have followed that. So every year I have made a point of learning and being focused on it. And can you imagine if we teach this in primary school? Couldn't that be wonderful? When new things come in, there wouldn't be so much fear around it.
Exactly. Exactly. Wow. So we have a comment I want to show with you on the screen. John Campbell says, we get too dependent on the things we build and we begin to lose our innovations. Wow. Comments, Sharon.
Well, anything like that can happen. We lose our innovations. Do we lose their innovations or do we just set them aside for something new? Think about how innovation has developed over time. If you take any industry, it doesn't matter what it is, the industry over time has evolved because of new innovations in those fields. And it's about the cross-referencing. Like I'll just give you this very strange example. There was a gentleman probably 50 years or so ago who developed a special kind of measurement so that he could measure the amount of pressure in the machine so that he knew when to slow it down so, you know, the engine wouldn't blow. And they took that and they brought it into medicine and they adapted it so they could measure the pressure in your brain. So when you had a head injury, they knew how to give you medication to bring the pressure down in your brain.
Okay.
That's innovation. Now they have even more technology that's even better. So innovation, I don't think you lose. I think it changes and adapts to what it needs to adapt to, what's most valuable at that time.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Another way of looking at it. Thank you so much, Sharon. We really appreciate it. Are you currently involved in any mentoring programs?
I am. I have right now, I do this one-on-one coaching, and mm-hmm. I have a program. It's based on my book. So we go through each chapter in the book. It's a one-year program so that by the end of that year, you have had practice in each area so that you really know your skills. And so I mentor you all the way through some group coaching and practice. We do lots of practice, and I bring in more speakers so that everyone can understand, because everyone learns differently, right?
Right. Yeah.
And it's starting soon. It'll be starting up soon. So, and it's to help you to be the best that you can be in all 9 areas of vitality.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing. Are there any books or biographies or anything like that in the making for you?
No, not right now. I have some outlines that I have been working on for some time, but I don't have anything planned for the near future. There right now, it's making sure that, you know, that I get to help the people that are there and ready for me. And in the future, I'm sure there will be more. I'm always available for speaking, and I love doing podcasts because I love talking to people.
Wonderful. Yeah, we can tell. Wonderful. Appreciate that. So in terms of going forward, what are the future things that you see yourself that you're looking to accomplish, maybe on the horizon or in a vision that you have? Because I know that you're a goal setter and a goal achiever. Are you looking at anything magnificent or wonderful that we can look forward to?
Well, I do have my book is coming out on Audible soon. Well, that'll be out soon. I have my new program that I'm developing, and I'm hoping to develop some new programs in the future. And what I would like to do is do a summit at some point in the future where I can bring experts like you and so many other people I've met in to help families and to help individuals, whoever would like. So that's the summit. I'm looking at that probably into early next year. So
okay,
maybe
great.
The end of this year. I know it's a long way off. It's just I do like to think in advance. And so
yeah.
Exactly. And of course, there'll be some 1 and 2 hour sessions going forward that I love to do on Zoom calls, so that I can help small groups on specific areas. So, there's something that you would like me to talk about, any of your audience, shoot me a message, and I will be more than happy to do a talk on that and send it off to you.
Wow, we are so very, very grateful and thankful to you for that. We appreciate that so much, Sharon. Thanks a lot. We applaud you. In terms of the ills that are happening in the world, we see wars, we hear rumors of wars, and we know that there are battles happening for territory and for several reasons. There's always the threat of cancer. There's always the threat of poverty, inequality. Some people are like refugees in their own homelands. Mm-hmm. Which one of the ills of the world irks you the most? Or is it more than one?
That's a very difficult one. I think war is probably what irks me the most. Most wars are fought for financial reasons.
Okay.
Or for religious reasons.
Yeah.
The only people that lose are the civilians. And that creates so much poverty and famine and death. and trauma. I mean, the amount of PTSD that, you know, our little ones are having because of being involved in a war or having to walk across a desert with no water and no food to get help. Like that is, I think that war is what irks me, because war creates all of those things, and it creates hate. Like, a month ago you were talking to your neighbor, and now you have a gun pointed at each other. Like, we don't need those in our world. So I actually ask everyone to every day send love and peace to the world, because if you wake up and you deliberately send that, then it does go out. Your intentions go out there to the world. And because war creates all of those things that we look at and we hate so much. Yeah. And it comes from a place that there is no need. There's no need.
Yeah.
If you know how to talk to each other and really communicate and really, really get to see each other's point of view and try to help each other and make a difference in each other's lives, there wouldn't be war.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what's really sad, Sharon, is that when we were born, we were not born with all these baggages.
Yeah.
They became learned. And we had to learn them from somewhere. Somebody had to be the teacher. And I think that most of us don't realize that we have to take the responsibility for the outcomes of things that happen in our lives based on what we learn and what we practice. Instead of blaming the government and blaming the community and blaming our parents. And I know sometimes it's easy for me to say that, because I may be in a position where I've extended my ability to understand neurosciences and et cetera. But at the end of the day, every one of us have a responsibility to choose.
Mm-hmm.
And even though you may be taught something, question it. Weigh it. Look around you and see, what is the thing that really matters the most? Is it my opinion, or is it the right opinion? And so at the end of the day, the question I guess I want to ask is, how do we encourage people, because we can't force them, to accept responsibility for their actions?
There's this saying, perceptions are everything. Your thoughts create your perceptions, and your perceptions create your actions. If you question your perceptions and your thoughts, then you can change your thoughts, you can change your perceptions, and you'll change your actions.
Yeah.
So question everything. We are so inundated with so much information bombarded constantly. And it's all companies, people that are working towards getting you to think like them, to agree with them, to want their things. Question your thoughts. So if your thought is like, I really don't like this person, ask yourself, why don't I like this person? Is it because I really don't like this person? Or is it because somebody else said they didn't like this person and I like that person, so I'm going to agree with them?
Mm. Yeah.
And it's about changing that. So when you say to yourself, I don't really know this person, so how can I decide if I like or dislike them?
Okay.
So the action is then it's like, well, maybe I'll get to know them, find out. And let's face it, when we get to know one another, when we ask those questions, those open-ended questions, so that we can get to know one another, then, you know, it's very rare that you actually dislike someone, because you can always find something that you can agree on, you can hang on to. And so maybe there's going to always be things that you don't agree on, because after all, we're human. And that's how we make our world great, is because we don't agree on things. So we figure out how to agree. We figure out the best way, and then we make it so. And that's,
yeah. I like that. Wow. I have two comments here. Wow. Okay. So he says, it seems when we go forward, we tend to lose the ability to hold on to the things that we have learned. We go up, but if we have to go down or back, there seems to be always great difficulty. Why is that? Wow.
And so you don't lose your ability to hold on to things. You let go of things that don't serve you anymore, and you hold on to the things that do. It just sometimes feels like you're losing them. And as you go forward, you grow and expand as an individual. And by doing that, the things in the past that no longer serve you, you don't think of them as being necessary in your life anymore. So you leave them there. Does that help?
Wow. So I think this is probably his last one. Sad to say, war is very profitable at the expense of human care. I agree with her. That is Sharon. Free thinkers are an endangered species. Perception alters reception.
Very true. And so so our job today is to promote free thinkers, to encourage that so they don't become endangered or extinct, right? We don't want free thinking to go the way of the dinosaur, right?
Right. That's right.
So that's a great challenge for your audience today, is to promote free thinking.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much. You have been an amazing guest, Sharon. I want to give you the opportunity now, and I'm going to put up on the screen there your LinkedIn profile link and also your Facebook link, so that they can make contact with you with regards to the things that you have shared and the things that you have offered. Where can they get the book as well?
The book, you can get that through me, and hopefully within the next month, you'll be able to get it on online as well. But if you would like the book, contact me and I'll be happy to send it to you.
Okay, great. I will bear that in mind and also let our audience know. It has been a wonderful program, quite engaging. A lot of information, a lot of content, a lot of value that we have shared with you people. And so we hope that as we continue, that you would also remember three watchwords: health, happiness, and prosperity. And Sharon has her watchwords as well. 9 ways to have more health, wealth, and happiness. The vital link. She says that you can make contact with her and you will be able to get a copy of that. So John is using my term here, shalom. Shalom, my friend, for your valuable and engaging comments. We appreciate them, Sharon and I. It has been a wonderful time that we've been sharing together. And as we go, we want to remind you to always think positive. Hold on to your story. It matters the most. It's yours. Mm-hmm. And there's no other story like it on the planet. Until next time, this is Andy together with my guest, Sharon Fillmore, saying so long, Godspeed, God bless, shalom, namaste.
Thank you. Bye. Shalom.
Okay, so that's the end of the stream there, and I-